Working Cows Podcast, Episode 23.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
This episode has been brought to you by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. Here's the deal about Kamak Ranch Supply. When you call and ask them about a product, there's no blank pause on the other end of the line because they don't understand the product that you just asked them about. If they are selling it, they understand it because they are producers, and Gary Kamak himself, the owner of Kamak Ranch Supply, is a producer. So if you want answers about the products you're calling to ask about from producers, call Kamak Ranch Supply or check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. Today's episode is exactly what the Working Cows podcast was created to do, to give producers a platform to share paradigm-challenging practices. Recently in a Stockmanship and Ranch Roping Facebook group, Dallas Mount, our guest on episode 2, started a discussion about how you would go about facilitating better profitability throughout your ranching business. And Brock Terrell came on and gave an excellent answer. And so I reached out to him through the group and said, hey, would you ever consider joining me for an episode to discuss your answer? And he was gracious enough to do that. And he was gracious enough to do it twice because I had an issue with my phone recording software. And so I appreciate him doing that. So enjoy this episode with Brock Terrell. Brock, thank you for joining me today on the Working Cows podcast. I would like to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about your operation, where you're at, and kind of your enterprise mix, I guess, and some of those things.
Okay, we're located in the northern panhandle, Nebraska, and we have a cow-calf custom stocker sheep. And we also farm, raise some row crops and some forage crops under irrigation. A lot of that goes into a custom backgrounding feedlot.
Well, the reason I invited you on today, and actually we had recorded this once, and my phone recording software apparently deletes the older recordings, and I hadn't properly saved it. So I appreciate you being willing to come back and rehash this discussion. But the reason that I asked you to come on and join me for a conversation was because of a discussion that was started by actually Dallas Mount, a guest on episode 2 of the Working Cows podcast. He started a discussion in the Stockmanship and Ranch Roping Facebook group. And you gave a very helpful answer to his discussion. And his question was, what are some of the things that you are looking at to do on your operation to improve profitability, and list them in order of importance? And your answer started out on with number one being matching stocking rate to carrying capacity. So how do you go about, first of all, I guess, determining carrying capacity on your operation?
Well, it's a constant moving target, changes with the seasons, changes with rainfall. So we're constantly monitoring. We graze our cows, HRM, holistic resource management grazing plan. And, We can tell pretty close with our grazing plan if we've got plenty of feed when we leave, when it's time to move, or if we're taking it too short. Pretty early in our grazing plan, we can make that decision if we're overstocked or understocked. And we don't start calving till the 20th of May, and by then we pretty much know kind of how the year's starting out. And then we calve for basically 90 days and sort them into three calving groups as they calve. So at any point in the growing season, we can pull the plug, sell the rest of our bred cows, and start getting destocked at to whatever rate we think is right.
You mentioned in the introduction to your ranch or your operation that you guys are also doing some custom grazing and some stockers. Is that part of also matching the stocking rate to carrying capacity for you guys? Is that something that you use as kind of a safety valve?
Yes. So we can, in this part of the country, we can stock highest at earliest in the year. And so that's the other safety valve for it's not raining. The calves can stay in the yard or go to the finishing yard. And also kind of the same as the bred cows. We can move them in and out if we need as well. So yeah, the drought plan would be don't put stalkers out, or stalkers need to leave early as number one, and then we move into the start into the cows, and we can destock cows. And the other benefit of calving this late and that long is if we do hit a good year, we can buy bred cows throughout the summer, and there's a calving group that they would fit in on our operation, and so we can increase stocking rate through the summer too, as if we have a better year.
Yeah, that sounds really good. What else? Is there anything else on your operation that goes into matching stocking rate to carry capacity?
So one of the comments on that Facebook page by Derek Swanebeck was that we probably need to increase stocking rate, or increase carrying capacity. Sorry about that. We need to increase carrying capacity so that we can have an increased stocking rate. So we do things like rotational graze and move cattle to the right feed resource so that we can increase that carrying capacity and not feed harvested forages.
Very good. The second thing that you mentioned in your answer was to reduce depreciation. And there's two parts under that, breeding stock and iron. So let's start with breeding stock. What are you guys doing to reduce depreciation on your iron? And let me throw out a little nugget here that if you are unfamiliar with the idea of cow depreciation and its importance on your balance sheet, I'll just give you a little synopsis of episode 6 of the Working Cows podcast with Aaron Berger. We covered cow depreciation, and in that episode, which I would highly recommend you go back and check out, he said that cow depreciation is oftentimes the first or second highest cost to an operation, or the second or third highest cost to an operation. So it is a bigger thing than maybe we realize, and if it isn't part of what you are using to do your economic analysis, it might be something that you could take into account and improve the financial sustainability of your ranch. So back to what you guys are doing there on the Terrell Ranch, what are you guys doing to reduce the depreciation of your breeding stock?
Okay, well, we firmly believe that most of our profit is made in buying undervalued cows. So we follow droughts and buy cows out of drought, buy late calvers that fit our system, but pretty much are bought with just a little premium over scale price. So if you're competing with the feeder cows or the cow buyers to buy your cows, you're not taking much depreciation. So that's the big take home is not getting a whole lot of money in them up front, and so that they depreciate. You get those big depreciation numbers up front. Secondly, would be to get those cows to last a little longer. We supplement roughage buster during breeding season, and I firmly believe that we get another year out of those cows by supplementing them on the back end of their life. So we don't pull down condition in the fall and go into winter behind. We maintain that body condition, and we get a lot of cows bred one more year. And if you can get 6 or 7 years out of a cow versus five, that changes that depreciation number quite a bit. And we don't typically have very many high risk animals, so we don't calve 2 year olds typically, unless there's real value there. But those animals that have a high risk of falling out, we try to avoid, just for that fact. If you get one calf out of her and she loses $500 of value, that's real depreciation there. So we want to keep those cows in our herd as long as we can.
Absolutely. So this is a big deal. Depreciation is a big deal. Depreciation in the breeding stock, and we'll get to the iron in just a minute. And I think everybody can probably understand pretty clearly what that's referring to. But with the breeding stock, I'd like to camp out there just a little bit more. And could you tell us like a success story of your managing depreciation in the breeding stock? Because it's an interesting idea, and I'd just like to camp out there a little bit longer.
Okay, well, so going through our sales and receipts from 2016, our coal cows averaged $45 a head more than our replacement cows bought. So we went through a year and had a negative depreciation on our herd. And some of that's by adding value to those cows on the back end too. We put some feed in them and flush them up and get them out of the typical November, December, fall cow run and try to market them in spring. And also we don't preg check. So we run all our cows over until about July, and then we'll pull any open cows off then. And that's usually a really good, or kind of a peak in the way up cow deal. And then we buy cows whenever, when the market's flooded with them. So we pick up a lot of cows in the middle of winter when maybe other people aren't necessarily looking for them yet.
Sure. Yeah. Really great stuff. And if you missed that, I'd encourage you to go back and catch that. Brock sharing about how they have managed their herd in such a way to achieve on some years, not every year, but on some years, achieve negative depreciation. And when you're talking about basically flipping the second or third largest cost, sometimes even a larger cost to a cow-calf operation than the feed itself, that can be a big deal. So I don't want you to miss that. I wanted to make sure that we caught that point and catch that. So moving on, continuing with this depreciation piece, you mentioned reducing the depreciation of iron. What are you guys doing to manage the depreciation of your iron?
Okay, well, that kind of goes along with number three, which was is cows per labor unit. And if we can get as many cows that one pickup and one tractor can take care of, your tractor and pickup depreciate the same whether you're taking care of 50 cows or 2,000 cows. So that's we don't run any new equipment. We typically don't feed very much hay, so we've got as cheap as equipment as we can, just kind of like buying cows. If you can find a deal and it doesn't have to be fancy, make them last a long time. That's beating that depreciation and not having a lot of it.
So are you telling me that you can feed cows even if your tractor isn't green?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, that might be news to some of us, but I appreciate that. And it's just an intentionality thing. You got to be intentional about managing these things, and maybe you don't look as fancy to the neighbors, but the balance sheet probably looks a little bit more fancy than the neighbors too. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and continue our discussion with Brock Terrell about how they are paying attention to the things going on their ranch in order to increase profitability. Recently, I had an opportunity to catch up with Derek Schwanebeck to ask him what he thought of continuing education, specifically the High Plains Ranch Practicum.
It's a softer way of learning, more family friendly. And I mean that in a people with kids kind of way. Because to go back to school, well, I was there. That's hard. But to, you know, be able to take 2 days off, you can get away. It's a comfortable learning environment with other folks who are experiencing or going through or have gone through the same things. It's a golden opportunity, I think, for people who are looking for a few things that can really make the difference.
Register early at hpranchpracticum.com. Previous classes have had a waiting list. Well, we are back with Brock Terrell. We have covered parts one and two and kind of touched on part three of his answer to a question in the Stockmanship and Ranch Roping group about how they are being intentional about improving profitability on their ranch. And so is there anything else you wanted to say about your third part of your answer, cows per labor unit? Anything else there that?
Yeah, I can add that. Some of the overheads that come along with the labor unit, your tractor, your pickup, your set of horses, the house, all that, all those extra costs. If you can do more on the same amount of that same amount of overhead, is just spreading those costs out over more animal units is knocking that labor price down. Even if you have to, you could pay a guy 50% more to take care of twice as many cows, and his cost per animal unit's going to be staggeringly less, just because of you don't have another house and another furnace running and another pickup and horse trailer. So yeah, if a guy can spread those costs out as far over as many animal units, and you're not going to do a perfect job if you're taking care of 2,000 cows. There's going to be some calves that don't that maybe needed pulled that didn't get pulled, or you might miss a sick one here and there. But in the big picture, financially, it's a big winner to stretch that labor out, and not necessarily that you have to work that hard, but you just need to be intentional about the jobs you're doing and making sure you're getting out there and seeing your stock and knowing that you got grass and water and everything's coming together, and not that you necessarily need to work 20 hours a day instead of 10 hours a day to take care of an extra 1,000 cows.
Sure. Very, very good. So far, we have covered parts 1, 2, and 3 of your answer. We've talked about matching stocking rate to carrying capacity. We've talked about reducing depreciation on the breeding stock and the iron. And we've talked about paying attention to the cows per labor unit. The next part of your answer was turnover. And I'm assuming that you're talking about increasing turnover. Am I right?
Yes. Yep. So yeah, as many, and that's kind of goes along, I guess they're all kind of intermixed. So the more turnover is, maybe buy cows, sell cows, turn over some calves, buy some calves in the fall and sell them in the spring, or in any way that you can market more animals per year gives you an opportunity to increase profit. So whether it's in number of head or classes of animals or any combination, I guess that's increase in turnover. So the sheep, adding the sheep enterprise would be a good example of increasing turnover. We've got more products to sell now. We're in different markets. We're selling wool and we're selling lambs and selling coal ewes. So that's all in the mix of adding turnover.
Sure. And if you want to catch a little bit more of that discussion on the sheep piece of what they've got going on there on their operation, I would encourage you to check out the Beef Watch podcast. Brock was a guest on the Beef Watch podcast with Aaron Berger, and was just a really great discussion about kind of how they got into the sheep industry and kind of their experience with the sheep industry and some of the things that they are doing there. But can you just talk a little bit about the benefit to the land and the benefit that you guys are noticing as far as how sheep complement the cows?
Okay, So we started in sheep. I think maybe we're into our sixth year now. We kind of started with the idea that we could run one sheep per cow for free, so no land cost, just their different grazing. And I think we found that to be just about spot on. We did get a little stronger. We were probably 1.25 sheep per cow, and we started to notice that the sheep were taking some cow feed away. Sheep have different grazing, different selectivity, so they go for the broad leaves and the flowers and the less desirable plants that the cows would be the last thing that they would graze, and then they'd move into grasses, and even when they graze the grasses, they just chew the very end of the leaf and the new freshest growth there, and they move on. And so we actually run the sheep out in front of the cows now and let the sheep get the best feed. They're the highest value commodity that we sell off the ranch. So we put them out front and they go and graze wherever they can find the best feed. And we don't account for them in our grazing plan because they graze so light that the plants recover quickly. And once the sheep leave a pasture, you'd never know they'd been there.
Yeah, very cool. I'm really excited about that. That's an enterprise that we have been kicking around because we're in a place in Belfouche, South Dakota, where, you know, we've got vets that know what a sheep looks like inside and out. We've got the wool warehouse. You know, I was talking to a guy northeast of Billings, which is, you know, four and a half, five hours from here, and they ship their wool all the way to Belfouche, you know. And so, and we've got a sale yard for sheep right here in Newell, South Dakota, just 30 miles away. So it something that makes a lot of sense for us. We just kind of got to figure out how we can fit them into our operation, but I think it's something that we are looking at as an option as well. So I appreciate that perspective. Well, we've made it through all the pieces except for one, and that is the heterosis. You guys are managing in such a way to maximize the impact of heterosis on your operation. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Okay. The heterosis is it's the only free lunch. From profitability standpoint, it's probably the lowest on this list. You could do all this other stuff with straight bred cattle, but it's the one that costs nothing to do and you get benefit from it. And so we terminal cross everything. Our white face ewes get black face bucks, and all our cows get Charley bulls on them. The benefits of the extra growth, but also when we're buying low value cows, we can put a white bull on them and they're all a uniform calf uniform calf crop of Charley cross calves. So whether we buy a black nose Charley cow or a Herford or Simmental, they're all going to have a Charley cross calf on them, and the buyers don't discount us for what our cow herd looks like.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I appreciate that. One more thing. Your wife is Heidi, right?
Yes. I better give her credit because we were driving to Christmas when this post came up, so we teamed up to come up with the list. So she's it's her list too.
Sure. I noticed in another discussion that she said that she was on her way to Ranching for Profit in Rapid City, South Dakota this last in January, correct?
Yes.
And so you mentioned also that you guys use the holistic management kind of to determine your stocking rate. Is that right?
Yes.
And so there's been influences from both of those organizations on your operation. Can you just talk a little bit about the importance of continuing education for you guys?
University of Nebraska's got a really good extension research. I think we have some of the best minds in the industry here, and so there's always opportunities for them to share. There's also resources like Ranch Management Consultants and the Executive Link with Dave Pratt, and he's been involved in some of the biggest and best operations in the U.S. and just has loads and loads of experience that he can draw from and help coach. And so I never learned anything from somebody I agreed with. So we try to be pretty active about participating in local or even regional events that have to do with the beef cow industry or sheep industry, and learn how we can do better and kind of know what else is out there.
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate that. That's a good point about not learning anything from anybody you agreed with. So I appreciate that. Is there anything we've left on the table here from the profitability discussion, at least as far as this post was concerned?
There's one there was a comment that followed by I think it was Dallas Mount was talking about enterprise analysis and enterprise mix, that maybe that should be number one. So should we be running cows? It might be the first question we should ask. Maybe we should be running steers and sheep, or do a bred heifer development program, or there's a thousand different ways to do it, and you could come up with your own new one. But very first question we should ask is, should we be running cows, and what mix of enterprises or species should we be doing?
Sure, very much, and that's just takes so much honesty. You got to be honest with yourself and look at it, and I think that there's legitimate reasons to be in the industry, but sometimes you look at it and say, well, we've got these resources and we could make a lot more money if we were willing to do this, whether it's grazing steers and sheep like you talked about or whatever it is, but you just got to be willing to honestly ask and answer those questions through the enterprise analysis process. And so there's some great tools out there to teach you how to do those things. Ranching for Profit talks about enterprise analysis. Holistic Management talks about enterprise analysis. The High Plains Ranch Practicum, of which I am an alumnus, talks about enterprise analysis. And so there are just so many different places you could go to learn those things. But I think the important part is to keep your mind open and to continue to try and find those places you can go to learn those different things. Links to all these things that we've mentioned, the discussion group, the stockmanship and ranch roping group, the appearance of Brock on the Beef Watch podcast, some of those other things, they will all be up available for you to find at workingcows.net/23. This will be episode 23 of the Working Cows podcast. So workingcows.net/23, and we will have those links up there. So Brock, I thank you again for taking the time again to do this. It's such a beneficial discussion, and these are my favorite episodes with producers who are actually making the decisions that will end up affecting the amount of food on their table at the end of the day. They're the ones who are going to be responsible for how they manage all the different things that have been entrusted to them. So thank you for taking the time again to do this. And I just give you the opportunity to share anything else that you wanted to share or any other resources that you wanted to make people aware of, anything like that.
No, I think you listed off a really good bunch of resources, and I might add that it'd be really good exercise to do your enterprise analysis, and you find out that you can make more money running sheep than cows, but doesn't mean that you have to switch. You can keep raising cows, but just know in the back of your mind that, you know what, I could be making 50% more if I'd make the decision to try a different enterprise or change the mix up a little bit. So you can do it, but it's really good knowledge to know where you're at and what you're doing.
Very good. Thank you so much, Brock. I appreciate your time today.
You bet. Anytime. Enjoyed it.
It was just a great opportunity to sit down with Brock Terrell and talk about what they're doing to increase the profitability on their ranch. Some really practical things, some things that I think everybody can take and use pieces of it or go all out and use the same strategy that they are using if you are willing to educate yourself and take the opportunity to learn and use the resources that have been entrusted to you. Coming up next week, we have a mind-stretching episode with Bob Kinford talking about instinctive migratory grazing. So don't miss episode 24 of the Working Cows podcast with Bob Kinford.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.